All right.
Be seated, please. Court is ready to hear argument in 081044 in the matter of BW.
May it please the court, Mr. Michael Twerke and Ms. Ann Johnson will present argument for the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Twerke will open with the first 8 minutes. Ms. Johnson will present the rebuttal.
May it please the court. Good morning. A petitioner in this case, CW, was 13 years old when she was spotted trying to sell herself for money on the streets of Houston. She was first spotted by an undercover police officer, and subsequently she was adjudicated as a juvenile for prostitution. In my time before the court, I plan to show how the legislature did not and could not have intended for children under 14 to be charged and adjudicated for prostitution. My colleague, Ann Johnson, will explain how the state's failure to conduct any investigation into BW's potential abuser violated her right to due process. Now, while these two issues are distinct, they are bound together by one fundamental question, which is how should the state respond when it first encounters a child engaging in the sex trade? Because the state chose to view BW solely as an offender and pursue her prosecution, it was blinded to the realization that the legislature never intended for children under 14 to have the offense of prostitution applied to them.
At what point in the process was it realized that she was 13? Because I think she presented herself as 19, isn't that right?
That's correct, Your Honor. It was very shortly after that she was booked into the adult system as a prostitute, and they ran a birth date check and determined that her birth date was put her at the age of 13 at the time, and so they immediately dismissed the files at the file at that point and refiled in the juvenile system.
But that's generally when they find that out, when they bring them in.
That is my understanding, yes, Your Honor. This court has repeatedly held, including at least two times within the last year alone, that even seemingly plain language of a statute is not to be considered as legislative intent if it leads to absurd results. This court's recent decision in City of Waco versus Lopez, I think, is instructive on that. That's a case where the court considered two statutes, the Commission of Human Rights Act and the Whistleblower Act, both which seemed on their face to apply to a worker's retaliatory discharge claim, and yet the court concluded that the legislature intended the CHRA to provide the exclusive remedy for such a claim.
So you read the literal language of this statute here. It seems to give the state authority to do what it did. And perhaps it is an absurd result. What is your response to their position, state's position, that this is a way for it to protect children that are subject to this type of this horrible act?
Well, Your Honor, the basic answer to that is that the ends don't justify a non-constitutional means. And that the fact that they believe that the current system that's in place provides protections for children, the state, when they encounter somebody who is on the streets and is obviously, which falls within the Family Code's definition of child abuse, has the authority to take her into custody and to provide her with treatment. And to instead brand her as a prostitute and to put her into the essentially criminal system despite its label of civil system is what Galt and Winship, the United States Supreme Court's decisions, have said this court should not do. Instead, the court should find a solution that doesn't require them to do what the legislature has said it shouldn't do. And in the legislature, in enacting Chapter 22, the sexual assault statutes, has very clearly laid out the fact that a child under the age of 14 is legally incapable of consenting to sex.
Is consent an element, if you will, of the adjudication of the delinquent conduct?
I believe it is. The prostitution statute speaks in terms of agreeing to engage in sexual conduct. I can determine no distinction between agreeing to engage in sex and consenting to sex. You cannot agree to engage in a non-consensual act. And so therefore, when the legislature considered age of consent within the sexual assault statutes, they clearly set forth the idea that a child under the age of 14 cannot legally consent to sex. They cannot legally agree to sex. And that's what BW was charged with in this case.
How many other cases are there like this, if you know, coming out of the Harris County or other parts of the state? This just seems to be unusual.
Well, there is one coming out of Harris County because it's before the court right now. We filed a petition for review in NRA VDSD, which is pending before the court right now. I'm not aware of the scope of the issue throughout the state of Texas, but it's clearly one where this court needs to provide guidance to avoid other courts following the lead of the Harris County District Attorney's Office if they choose to do so. If this court were to decide that the state's action in pursuing the child as an offender rather than providing her the protection that she's entitled to, I think other district attorney's offices are going to follow that lead and are going to take the easier path of pursuing prosecutions against these individuals.
Is an adjudication as a juvenile that the child engaged in this conduct, does that necessarily foreclose getting the child the help that's necessary? In fact, isn't it that the juvenile courts often take a very active role in making sure that the children are redirected?
I don't have any doubt, Your Honor, that the juvenile courts take steps to try to provide that assistance. The problem comes with you're treating the child as an offender, you're stigmatizing her with the offense of prostitution, which doesn't go away as soon as their charge is over. That's something that's going to stay with them for the rest of their life. And I think the U.S. Supreme Court has instructed us in Galton Winship that you should not look to these, you should not use the criminal system or the quasi-criminal juvenile system as a means to affect this relief for the child.
I understand.
Go ahead.
I understand your statutory argument, but the state says let's consider an adult who's engaged in the sex trade and is working with minors and telling them, if you will do this for me for money, don't worry about it. You can't be prosecuted because you're a minor and the law won't let you be convicted or charged in a juvenile proceeding for that sort of conduct. And that tends to facilitate the sex trade in minors. Shouldn't we be concerned as a policy matter whether a ruling in your favor might increase the incidence of this sort of horrible activity?
Well, I think the legislature has more than adequately covered that, first off by making the punishment for promotion of prostitution with a child far more severe than it is for promotion of prostitution with an adult. Furthermore, it's easier to prove compelling prostitution when the subject of the act is a child, because there you only have to prove that they caused by any means the child to perform prostitution.
What's the disincentive to the child? Right now, if a child thinks, okay, if I'm caught, I could be convicted and sent away. If that is in her mind or his mind, then they're less likely to agree to perform these sorts of acts. But if they believe, and if the law holds, that they can't be held accountable, then what's to stop them? I mean, I'm talking about the incentive in terms of the child.
Well, I think, Your Honor, that the presumption underlying that question is that a child under 14 is legally capable of consenting to sex. And I think the legislature has addressed that issue and has said that a child under the age of 14 cannot legally consent to sex. And so to hold that a child would be capable of making that sort of decision process would be contrary to the legislative intent as sent out in Chapter 22.
To follow up on that, let me ask you, what if the child had been 16? What if the child was 16?
If the child had been 16, then I think this absurd result argument would not apply, but then you still have the due process issue, which comes into play. And with the court's permission, I'd like to hand the podium over to my colleague, Ann Johnson, and she's going to address the due process.
Let me first ask Justice Guzman, did you have a question?
It's been answered. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Johnson.
May it please the court, it is an honor to represent BW and the significant impact her case will have on all children who are suffering from sexual exploitation. Chief Justice Jefferson, as you asked, this concern that pimps would be causing young children to commit prostitution to provide for a supply and a demand that's out there in Texas. The problem is this is already happening, and it's happening all too often. The issue is this concern and violation of due process, because as the studies show, the reality is there's a pimp that drives up and drops BW off on the corner on January 11th, and then that pimp is planning to come back and return and collect their prostitutes and their cash and go on about their business. The idea that by incarcerating BW, shackling her at the ankles and the hands and confining her to a cell, has cured this evil is ridiculous, because the reality is we've done nothing more but create a vacuum by which this pimp will go out and find another child to fill that void. We are doing nothing to stop the supply and the demand. The Texas
wasn't she in the system before, and she ran away and disappeared for a couple of years?
You're absolutely correct.
So I mean, we may have to go after the perpetrator some other way, but that kind of begs the question: what do we do about a child who says, "I'm not going to stay here. I'm running away. I'm crawling out the window at night"? That also is a problem that has to be dealt with. Is it not?
It is, Your Honor, and there are two answers to that question. And the first, as the psychologist report recognized, and we all will recognize, this is a troubled child. But in the same way that a child that gets sick and has a fever and a runny nose and has a severe cough, we don't get upset that the cough is getting worse and say, well, forget this child. We recognize we must step in and provide more relief. The fact that BW and her case in CPS wasn't treated properly, and they didn't provide her the right protections, does not excuse the fact that we now criminalize this child.
What are the right protections? What are the right protections for a child like this? Because no child in their right mind is going to participate in this type of activity.
That's correct. And, Your Honor, this child is part of an underground world in which we need law enforcement officers to discover them, because they are living in a world where they are being told to watch out for the police. And what normally a child would be taught at a young age, that when you see an officer in blue, you run to them. But these children are part of a world where they're being told, don't run to them and don't be out in the public where those of us could see them and report the abuse.
Don't the major police departments have sort of these juvenile divisions devoted a large part of their time to resolving the issues with juveniles in certain segments? Without resorting to adjudications under the juvenile code?
Your Honor, there does seem to be evidence that other counties are handling this differently. But as this court knows from this case, that's not the way it was handled here. When this child was picked up by HPD undercover officers on January 11th, she essentially was placed on the prosecution train, where they were seeking to catch and prosecute adult prostitutes. But despite their discovery that one of the passengers on the train was a 13-year-old mentally deficient child with undeniable evidence of sexual exploitation, no one to this day has pulled the emergency stop cord to say, wait, we're supposed to be handling this differently. The first issue, as co-counsel Mr. Troike explained, is that she can't even get on this train because there's an age requirement and she doesn't even fit. But even if she did, the family code requires that she immediately be taken off the train, Justice O'Neill, at the minute they discover that she's a child, and they put her on the protection train where she is treated within the family court system that requires that law enforcement conduct an investigation into the allegations of child abuse, which this child has, by definition, statutorily defined evidence of child abuse.
I'm not quite understanding this due process argument, because I mean, if she is arrested at the scene as she was in this case, is it your contention that she should then be released, because then there's no crime? She's not age of consent, and so she doesn't go into the system. But due process somehow requires the state to then try to find this pimp. Is somehow satisfying her due process rights? Is that? Am I getting this wrong?
You're correct, and there are two answers. One is when the child is discovered and she's 13 and she cannot legally consent to sex, then the family code kicks in and the requirements under 26.104 allow for law enforcement to immediately take possession of the child in recognizing that she's being subjected to sexual abuse. We're not saying that these children are left to just roam the streets and leave them alone.
But her argument would be, well, I've committed no crime.
This is not...
Yeah, being subjected to abuse, but I've committed no crime, and so she should be compelled to be placed into custody because of this alleged abuse against her?
There are two separate answers. One is, she should not be charged with a crime under the penal code. She should be brought into the family court system through the provision of the family code that allows law enforcement to pick her up so we can all be satisfied she's not remaining on the street. The due process claim is the fact that they didn't follow that procedure out of the family code. They brought her in under Section 43.02 and criminalized her within the juvenile justice system.
Let me ask you about the family code, though. Chapter 261, are there any specific provisions that require the police officers, the state, to investigate this compulsion of prostitution? Can you point to anything in the family code that supports that argument?
Yes, Your Honor. Section 261.301 requires an investigation. Under Section D.
Specifically the compulsion of prostitution?
Not specifically 43.05, but specifically the conduct that 43.02 tells us the child was committing, which was child abuse. Under Section H, the department and law enforcement shall conduct an investigation. If they conduct that investigation, as required by law under the Family Code, and they discover that the child has been caused by any means under Section 43.05 of the Penal Code to commit the act, then she is immune from prosecution under 43.06. And it is for these reasons that we ask that this court reverse and remand back to the trial court for an appropriate disposition.
A quick question. The due process violation, is it twofold? Are you claiming one is the failure to investigate and two is the failure to put her into the child protection system? Is there another portal she could have been put through that would have put her into foster care and returned her to court supervision?
Yes, Your Honor. Chief Justice Jefferson, I see that my time has expired.
You may answer that, and then Justice Wainwright has a question as well.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, Judge, the family code, this provision of Section 261.301, as previously stated, allows for the investigation. There is the ability under the family code to immediately take the child in and provide her protection through that family vehicle of the protection train.
And I guess the reason I ask that question is the argument's been made that by keeping her in the juvenile justice system, she'll have counseling and protections, but that protection's already there in the family code.
Correct. Not only is that protection already there, but the Texas legislature recently recognized in its legislative history that what we say we're doing of protection, not only is criminalizing, we're not giving them the services we say we are, and they're falling right back under the thumb of the pimp once released from the juvenile justice system.
So to make sure I understand, to summarize your position, and correct me if this is not accurate, you're arguing that the Due Process Clause of the U.S. Constitution requires that the police take DWs to obtain treatment under the Family Code through the juvenile justice system, and the Due Process Clause precludes prosecution of her for prostitution.
The answer again is if she is under the age of 14, then they may not prosecute.
Which she is.
Which she is. And yet, due process still applies to all these other children suffering the sexual exploitation, that if the state does not conduct that investigation as required in the Family Code and treat them first on the protection train, then if they just merely let this prosecution keep going without considering the fact that the child may be compelled.
Okay, let me rephrase it. In this case,
yes, sir.
Your argument is that under the facts, all the facts of this case involving BW, the Due Process Clause required the police to take her for treatment through the Family Code provisions and precludes prosecution of her under the Penal Code.
Yes, for both reasons of the absurd result in her age and the violation to comply with the investigation that may have led to the immunity from this prosecution. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Dan McCrory will present argument for the respondent.
Why is the prosecution of this child not an absurd result?
Not an absurd result? Well, as you said earlier, Justice Medina, the plain language of the applicable statutes in this case do indicate that the legislature did intended for juveniles to be adjudicated for the offense of prostitution. And, of course, the plain language comes from the two main statutes, the adjudication statute, which is 51.03 in the Family Code, and then, of course, the prostitution statute, 43.02 in the Penal Code. Reading those two statutes in combination, the plain language of those statutes indicates that there is a legislative intent.
Well, but the offense itself contains an element of agreement. And if the legislature has said, under 14, you can't agree, you can't legally
Correct.
Consent, then there's no offense.
And that's the same thing I believe you were asking, Justice Medina, and I'm sorry it took me so long to get to an answer, but I wanted to give you a little backdrop about the plain language, since this is a case of statutory construction. And in cases of statutory construction, we are required first and foremost to follow the plain language of the statute. But with all that said, why is this not an absurd result? The defendant's argument that it is an absurd result to prosecute to adjudicate juveniles for the offense of prostitution all resides in the aggravated sexual assault statute, 22.021 of the Penal Code. And the defendant's argument is that statute states that a juvenile under the age of 14 cannot consent to sex. However, and I disagree that's actually what 22.021 says. Again, this is a statutory construction case. And the rules of statutory construction direct us to focus on the literal text of the statute. So applying the rules of construction to the statute upon which the defendant is relying, the petitioner, the aggravated sexual assault statute, 22.021, if you look at the literal text of that statute, nowhere in that statute does it say that a child under the age of 14 cannot consent to sex. What it does say is that the consent of a child under the age of 14 is not relevant, does not serve as a defense for a sexual assault offender.
How is this different from a statutory rape situation where an adult male has sexual relations with a girl under the age of 18 or 17 or whatever those laws are? How is that any different?
When you say how does this differ, do you mean this being the prostitution statute?
Right.
Or
I mean, because from what I understand, a female can't consent to sex under the age of 17 with the male over.
Well, again, that goes back, I think that's the misperception here, is when people say a juvenile cannot consent. Again, returning to the literal language of the what you call the statutory rape statute, which is 22.021, again, nowhere does that statute say that a juvenile cannot consent to sex. What the statute says is that a juvenile's consent is not relevant to the defense of an adult offender, adult sexual assault offender.
The May case does.
Well, I think the May case, which is cited by both parties, actually demonstrates what I'm maybe making a poor attempt of explaining.
But it does say you can't legally consent.
Yes, sir, it does say that. It quote says that a juvenile under the age of 14 cannot consent to sex. And then it goes on to explain that statement. If you read like the next several sentences, I believe, I can't swear to it, but somewhere in that opinion, it goes on to explain that the juvenile cannot consent. Let me back up. I think it's all contextual whether a juvenile can consent or not.
So and a I juvenile think could agree, but it is legally ineffective. Any purported
Correct.
Agreement.
I mean, we all know that juveniles, in fact, can consent to sex. I mean, you know, we know that 13-year-old children, unfortunately, nowadays, are consenting to sex. And
well,
what May says.
But I understand May sort of says that because they allow promiscuity defense back in before you couldn't do that. But there's consent and there's consent. I mean, at some point, the law says, well, you may consent, a minor may consent to buy a car, but we're not going to let him consent because he doesn't know what he's doing.
We won't give it legal effect.
Well, but not only that, but even though he may shake his head up and down and write his signature, he still doesn't know what he's doing.
Oh, because he lacks the faculties or maturity.
But it's not really consent. I mean, it's not the kind of consent that the law expects you to be bound by. And isn't that what 22.021 is saying? That, oh yes, maybe you can consent in the sense that you say yes, but you're not consenting because you don't know what yes means.
Actually, no, sir, I don't think may necessarily stands for that proposition. I think may actually demonstrates the point I'm, again, maybe poorly attempting to make, is that I believe a juvenile under the age of 14, her ability to consent to sex depends on the circumstances. And I point to May for that proposition. In May, which we've already discussed, it says that a child cannot consent to sex under the age of 14 in the context of 22.021. In other words, in the context of a sexual offender's defense. It cannot serve as a defense. But that opinion goes on to determine or to examine whether in the context of the promiscuity defense, a 13-year-old girl can engage in consensual sex. Because the May opinion does say that promiscuity does contemplate consensual sex.
Now, look, your and office then, seems to be in a difficult situation. You find these young ladies or men that are being abused. Is there a policy reason to seek prosecution of these children, other than what we've read in the briefs, which, you know, that can go some other way as well?
And let me just say, this isn't the kind of case that anybody on either side takes any pleasure in. You know, this isn't like a murder case where a prosecutor at the end of the day can feel good about removing a murderer from the streets, from the community. There's no winner on either side in this kind of case. As we've all said, it's a tragic situation. As far as how our office treats it,
I mean, you said you look into the totality of the circumstances. I mean, this is a horrible situation.
Isn't right.
That he had a couple of abortions before this? And
yeah, well, according to her self-report. But yeah, and I think there's something called prosecutorial discretion. I don't know how familiar, you know, I know the judges across the hall are familiar with that, and I imagine y'all probably are too, but prosecutorial discretion is a pretty powerful concept. It's what gives prosecutors the discretion to charge people or to decide what to charge them with. I mean, it's so powerful that even in capital murder cases, you know, we have discretion whether to seek the death penalty or just seek a life, you know, life and death decisions. You know, in one county, a prosecutor might seek death in a capital case.
Why in the world would we want to intake a 13-year-old through the door of juvenile justice as opposed to the door of child protection? I don't understand that.
Well, I think this case illustrates that, Judge. As one of the honors has already observed, when this girl was out, you know, being a 13-year-old prostitute on a, you know, a morning, she was already in the custody of CPS at that time for an unrelated event.
Well, she had run away, and there's no, I mean, you talk about discretion. Clearly the decision could have been made to find the perpetrator, find the pimp, so to speak, because she made it clear she was living with a 32-year-old boyfriend. An attempt could have been made to find that person and prosecute him instead, and she could have been put back into the care of CPS, where she would have gotten counseling and not a record. Why in the world would a prosecutor want to put her through the criminal, sort of quasi-criminal system?
Well, I mean, I can't tell you what went through the mind of the person that was actually screening this case. But what I can tell you is, again, as best I know, there were two options, two main options here. One was to do what you just suggested, put her back in the CPS program. The other one was to adjudicate her and have her enter the juvenile justice system.
Statistically, is there any difference in the deterrence rate between juveniles that are adjudicated for the offenses they actually commit versus juveniles where decisions are made not to adjudicate them and they are put back into a different process, a CPS process?
I wish I could answer that, but no, ma'am, I don't have any knowledge of any statistics. Okay. But again, going back to what you're asking, given those two options, again, it goes to prosecutorial discretion. We already know what happened when this juvenile was in the custody of CPS. She was on the streets being a prostitute. The other option.
I mean, I hear you.
Well,
the kids run away.
I don't mean. I don't.
They can be brought back to the system. So it doesn't strike me that a runaway from CPS automatically then is forever put into the juvenile justice system as a result.
Well, I think there can be cases, and this may be one of them, where if you have a person, a juvenile, who's prone to runaways, has already demonstrated that she's prone to running away, that between those two alternatives, CPS and juvenile justice,
well, and
juvenile justice system.
There are methods of dealing with that in the child protection system as well. They're more secure facilities, and that can be evaluated. But can you tell me Has anybody ever looked to see who this alleged boyfriend is? Has there been any...
The record's silent about that. I can't tell you.
Do you find that disturbing?
That the record is silent? Because, I mean, if...
Yeah.
Ma'am, yes, ma'am. I mean, I'd be, as I said earlier, this is not the kind of case that anybody takes pleasure in. Ideally, anytime you find a 13-year-old girl prostituting herself, it ought to be investigated. I'm not saying there's a due process right to that, but I mean, obviously, everybody in society, they want, you know, in all crimes, we want to catch the big fish. You know, in drug cases, you know, we might be arresting a lot of street-level people, but we want the big fish. You know, it's the same in this case. You know, we would prefer to have the big fish, the pimp.
In this case, if the minor had been apprehended in a sexual act that she had solicited, then I guess the state's position is that she might be guilty of delinquent conduct because of prostitution, and the man would be guilty of essentially rape. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there another situation where you can be guilty of rape when the woman is a prostitute and has essentially given consent?
You're talking about an adult situation? Yes. Where the prostitute is an adult?
Any other situation other than statutory rape.
Is there any time where the... I don't believe so.
Seems to me to be the... I mean, there's a question about absurdity in the case, and it seems to me the one that troubles me the most is the one that there's this very odd situation that it's going to be legally rape, no matter what, because
yes.
The child is a minor, and yet she's going to also be adjudicated a prostitute.
She's simultaneously an offender and a victim.
And I'm wondering if there's
pretty
any
much
other,
out of the same act or continuing.
Right.
Act.
And is there any other situation like that?
No. And not that I know of. And I've given consideration to your observation. And I mean that does seem absurd, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And the reason we get to that absurd situation is because what the to find that a juvenile can't consent, you have to engage in a legal fiction, because the juvenile is in fact consenting. It's just
at a certain age.
Correct.
Well, the whole construct is a legal fiction when it says that a child under 14 can't consent.
It is a legal fiction because I mean juveniles, you know, 13-year-olds are in our society, they are consenting to sex. I mean, in fact. You know, take the legal jargon out of it, they're in there.
We're here over the legal fiction, and we're here over that protection that's afforded legally.
Pardon me?
We're here over the protection that the statute affords. So to say it's legal fiction, well, it's one that the legislature's created. So it's not like...
Well, again, that goes back to assuming that juveniles cannot consent. And again, I don't want to regurgitate my argument from several moments ago, but as I said, if you read the literal language of 22.021, it actually does not say that juveniles can't consent. It's just that it's irrelevant in the context of a sexual offender's defense.
To understand your statutory interpretation argument, the inability to consent in a strict liability crime, like statutory rape, you don't think that applies to this prostitution applies outside of the statutory rape context?
Yes, sir. That correctly states my position. And the reason is, that's my position, that in the context of a sexual assault offender's defense, the adult who's raping a child, the juvenile under the age of 14, her consent has no relevance.
So you're saying the legislature did not intend broadly to say juveniles can never consent.
Exactly.
In a criminal context.
That's the crux. I don't think they meant...
Limited to the statutory rape context.
Correct. I don't think that the legislature intended to export this inability to consent concept out of 22.021 and apply it in toto to the remainder of the penal code provision. And again, that goes back to our discussion, I believe, of the May case, Again, that's the case where it says juveniles cannot consent under the age of 14, cannot consent in the context of the offenders, the adult offender's defense. But then it went on to examine whether juveniles could consent in the context of the promiscuity defense. And it found that promiscuity does require consensual sex acts.
What's the low age for conviction?
10.
Could an 10-year-old? So you could prosecute a 10-year-old like you did this 13-year-old for prostitution?
You know, and again, it all goes back to prosecutorial discretion. Just anecdotally, you know, I know we get some cases where, you know, the police call up and the child's run away from home maybe for a day or two and is engaged in some conduct similar to this, and, you know, we'd send them back home. You know, we don't get the police involved in every case.
So what happens in a situation like this if the state prevails? Is there going to be all these operations to go around to children at under 14 and try them for these type of activities? Or is there, you know, how does the state benefit from you prevailing?
Well, if we prevail in this case, and I'm not saying that we ought to adjudicate every juvenile who engages in prostitution, just the ones whose best interests are served by that. And like I said, in a case like BW, who seems to run away from CPS custody, the only way we can ensure that she's not out on the street engaging in acts of prostitution is if she's in lockdown facility of the juvenile justice system. That, I don't think that can be insured through the CPS.
Well, Kuhay and Luke kept running away, and they kept locking him up, and they eventually just shot him. I mean, you know, I mean, that's what you're saying. Just keep locking him up, and if they get out, you know, find some other means to.
Well, and I'm not saying we just lock her up. I'm, you know, a person like BW obviously is in dire need of programs. You know, we need programs to address the problems that are causing this behavior, these underlying problems, whatever they are, whether they be homelessness, poverty, domestic violence, whatever it is, services are what are important to this girl. And she gets those services within the juvenile justice system. And by virtue of the fact that the juvenile justice system provides lockdown facilities, we ensure that she's actually attending those instead of running away and finding herself back on the street. I'm not saying juvenile justice system is the best alternative for every juvenile prostitute that gets picked up off the street. I don't think our issue today is whether the best thing. I think the issue today is whether what the state did in this case was permissible.
And on that subject, if we take May as what it says, even though maybe it didn't mean it, that a minor can't consent, someone less than 14 cannot consent, and say that legally that's what the statute says, they can't consent, then the Chief Justice asked earlier, wouldn't that cause a problem because it provides no disincentive to a 13-year-old not to engage in this conduct? And the answer was, well, but there are enhanced penalties for the person that puts them in that position. What other problems do you see with law enforcement if a child under the age of 14 can't consent?
Well, quickly to answer that question, that there's already a disincentive for pimps not to engage in this conduct because, you know, compelling prostitution is a whatever degree felony, second degree, I believe. But the answer to that position is that position assumes that the pimp gets caught. The only way he's going to get suffer those consequences is if he gets caught. But even if he doesn't get caught, he suffers a setback if his juvenile prostitute is removed from the street, as opposed to, you know, just getting her non-adjudicated and finding herself falling back under her control. So yeah, I think it would be ridiculous to hold that juveniles can go out on the street and commit fits of prostitution, whether it be with a pimp or not, and not be subject to adjudication.
Well, given the child sex trade and everything that that entails in terms of the detrimental effects on children and society as a whole. This notion of a child consenting to anything under those circumstances is absurd.
Consenting to sex
under the control of a
consenting to sex in the context of a prostitution offer? You know, I guess I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. As my point has been made using May, I think when a person under the age of 14 may consent varies on the circumstances.
Is there a difference between a child who is victim of this organized trading in children versus a child who's simply misguided and maybe is out on the streets for 2 days when we look at whether or not that child can consent?
Is there a difference in whether those two children can both consent?
How we should approach that.
Well, how we should approach it, certainly, yeah, that it should be approached differently. If you have somebody, if you have a juvenile who's under the control of a pimp, yeah, I think it's important to remove her from that influence. And the only way to do that may be to use the juvenile justice system. Because as we said, this defendant was already, or this, I'm sorry, this juvenile was already under the supervision of CPS at the time she was out doing all this stuff. Whereas, yeah, if it's a girl that's just, you know, being rebellious and she runs away from home and she's out two nights and finds herself doing things, then, yeah, we may examine that differently and realize that there's not some evil force out there that's behind her that we need to protect her from. She needs to get back home with her parents, maybe take advantage of CPS services, and the juvenile justice system doesn't need to get involved.
That really puts at a disadvantage someone who can't go back to their parents or somebody who may have a mental deficiency. So that seems like a skewed way to view the problem.
Well, if that's the best way I understand everybody's different. Everybody has their own problems, and they may have mental problems or a bad family home, and they don't have the support.
So we throw them into the juvenile facility.
Well, we say throw them into the juvenile facility as though it's, you know, again, we've got to remember it's not the adult system. The purpose of the juvenile system is to rehabilitate and to remove
it. And it does give her a record. And this is a crime of moral turpitude from what I understand.
That's
correct. She can never be a lawyer. She can never, it's a significant impact on a child's life for something that somebody's obviously exploiting them under the age of 13.
I don't know if you can say someone's obviously exploiting them. I mean, I'm not going to be ridiculous and say here.
Same with me, she was exploited. It does have a significant lifetime impact.
That's true.
A record does.
But, you know, and I would imagine, though, that most juveniles who are engaged in whatever crime, whether, you know, aside from prostitution, murder, robbery, you know, they probably are doing those things because they lack certain things at home or lack certain mental faculties, just like you described for the juvenile prostitute. And nevertheless, those people, those juveniles, they pay the consequences for their conduct.
Are there any further questions? Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
This may be more a co-counsel question, so forgive me, but aside from absurdity, what is the best sort of textual basis or argument as to why the penal code and the family code say a person under 14 cannot be prosecuted for prostitution?
As to why? It says that, Justice Willett, the penal code specifically requires under Chapter 22 that a child under 14 cannot consent to sex. The May court
has
recognized
that. Well, it doesn't really say
that.
It doesn't really say that.
The child can say, I consent. The child can say, I'm doing this because
I love my
boyfriend.
The statute doesn't say that.
The statute says it's without consent if the child is under the age of 14. That's specifically what the statute says. May recognizes that, as have a line of cases. As in Wagner, the
court... Actually, let's talk about May. May says, that's the Court of Criminal Appeals case from 1996, it is true that a child under 14 cannot legally consent to sex because subsection A2 is a strict liability offense not requiring proof that the victim did not consent. As you know, that dealt with the promiscuity defense, which was, I believe, abolished in 1994. But then May says, the child's prior agreement to participate in sexual activity before age 14 was not legally consensual does not mean that it was involuntary or without permission. So May doesn't strike a broad approach that says consent is impossible for a 14-year-old across the board. May recognizes, at least in the Court of Criminal Appeals opinion, that that the conduct was still not involuntary or without permission.
Yes, Your Honor, the court recognized that the child can say, I'm consenting, but that has no legal effect as far as the defense for the person that has sexually assaulted her.
And or promiscuity.
Well, that promiscuity defense has been, as the court recognized, repealed, and there's been a line of cases that have come since this time significance of May and the fact that it continues to stand for the position that children under 14 cannot legally consent to sex. What may be more applicable here is Wagner, where the court recognized in a case of compelling prostitution, as we're dealing with in this case, it doesn't matter if the child is a willing participant. She cannot consent legally to the form of being held responsible, and the culpable party is the pimp that is exploiting her or causing her to commit the crime. Part of the problem with the state's response is they're saying, I can't say that she's exploited. Justice O'Neill, that's the problem. This is a question that cannot go unanswered. The family law requires that when we discover a child under a suspicion of child abuse, and this one's not a suspicion, we know it, it's confirmed, and the fact that they didn't follow up with the investigation simply under some theory that the family code requires when a report is made to law enforcement, you shall investigate.
What if there is no PIMP? What if she's just doing this on her own?
Again, we get back to under the age of 14. She can't consent. She needs to be put into the family services area where she can receive the proper services, and she needs them. If a child is over the age of 14, again, there's a separate consideration. And petitioner would caution with this idea that there's a magic line at 14. Due process requires that we analyze this fact pattern under both the family code and the penal code. And even the penal code recognizes that a child over 14, there is still consideration of whether or not there is consent. And that's based on this Romeo and Juliet type of idea of being within 3 years. The family code specifically mandates that a child under 18 is a child and an allegation of sexual exploitation calls for an investigation into the adults around the circumstance, and that never happened here.
Where is BW right now? The judge put her under the custody of the juvenile probation officer. What does that mean?
Your Honor, she was placed in the custody of the chief juvenile probation officer under probation. Answering the question of where she is now would require me to go outside the record if the court would allow me to answer that question.
You may.
I understand that she is civilly committed due to her mental retardation. This is a child that desperately needed our help at that time. And the idea that she didn't get it then, and as Mr. McCorry says, well, we made a mistake and somebody missed it in the screening process, the problem is that train of prosecution never stopped. It is still moving down the line. This is not an area of prosecutorial discretion. Someone had to have the ability and the strength to stand up and stop it. And that is why this court must draw the line and recognize that a child, when you come into the system, must be investigated and protected and not prosecuted. Petitioner prays this court will restore that promise that the state is here to protect our children.
I think the legislature should have written the statutes differently.
Chief Justice Jefferson, I see my time has expired. Your Honor,
to expressly direct that children under 14 go be handled under the family code as opposed to the penal code, that would have made it crystal clear, wouldn't it, if they had said something that was unambiguous about that.
Your Honor, the issue, as Mr. Troike explained, was that we stopped this blanket adoption of the penal code into the juvenile system. And the legislature couldn't anticipate that they would drag in 4302 but not contemplate Chapter 22. The law is good law. It's not being enforced. The law is that children cannot consent under this age, and the law is the minute we discover a child in need of our protection, we immediately get them to the proper services. It is for these reasons we ask this court reverse and remand for an appropriate disposition.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
All rise.